Okay, good evening, everyone. Let us begin, please, with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, with liberty and justice for all.
I almost forget the words to that sometimes. Did we have roll call, please?
Yes, good evening, Commissioners. Chair Hartwig?
Present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo? Okay. Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
Commissioner Griffith?
Present.
Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have a motion for last month's minutes, please? Approval.
I actually have something I just noticed, which is on the approval of the minutes, that the motion and the second seem to be from the same person.
Ooh. On which item? Oh, for the actual minutes?
Approval of the minutes.
You're right. And I don't have my sheet in hand, so I'm not sure who did what.
Sorry for that.
No. Good catch.
That's a good call.
I'm sorry we missed it. So we can actually bring them next time, and we'll look up the record.
Okay.
Okay, so can we move the item conditional upon correcting that to the right?
Or we can just bring it back next month. We'll just double-check the record. I don't know who did it.
Oh, all right. That's fine. We can do that as well. Okay, good. Very good. All right, then on to old or unfinished business.
There is none.
There is none. Modifications to the agenda. I think we will do one modification to the agenda, which is to bring the speakers up to right now.
So moving item E up to the front of the agenda?
Yes, moving item E up to the front of the agenda. So we will begin. Let's see, we have, I believe, Tanya Love. Is that correct?
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Tanya Love. I'm here on behalf of Assemblymember Rob Bonta's office, on behalf of our constituent, Etta Johnson. And I'm here asking that you pass a resolution authorizing that the executive director reinstate Ms. Johnson's housing voucher. I came to you last year around this time asking for you to review Ms. Johnson's case, sharing our office's opinion that she was not given a fair review hearing. I was told that it was under the director's sole discretion and that the only way that Ms. Johnson could get her decision reversed was for her to go to court and for the court to find in her favor. Ms. Johnson did in fact go to court, and in June of this month, or this year, her petition for a writ of mandate, which is asking for a government agency to correct their prior actions, was granted. In the writ, the judge found that Ms. Johnson's due process was violated. The petitioner's process rights were, in fact, violated because the judge found that her OHA hearing did not satisfy the requirements of due process because OHA failed to provide any facts or events in order to establish conduct amounting to serious or repeated violations. And they also found that the pre-termination notice was insufficient and that there was a lack of clear identification of how she had violated her lease. And they also found that OHA's claim that she did not file her unlawful detainer in a timely manner, and that the pre-termination notice of that charge was also insufficient, when in fact Ms. Johnson did attempt to bring her unlawful detainer notice to the office in February. In addition to these findings, I would like to strongly urge that the commission decline to appeal or review the petitioner's case and reinstate her voucher for assistance with the public housing immediately. Because of this, Ms. Johnson has been without adequate housing for nearly a year, and it has caused her a great deal of distress, as it would with anyone. Ms. Johnson has experienced a string of ramifications based on this decision that have negatively impacted her well-being, her physical safety, and her ability to secure employment. Ms. Johnson has also experienced legal problems that resulted from her utilizing her car as a home. These facts have had significant and a negative impact on Ms. Johnson, and immediately reinstating her voucher, she can begin to start down the road of recovery and healing and rejoin her beloved community. Ms. Johnson has been a lifelong Oakland resident and has been an active member in her community for many years. This would have immediate positive impact, and so I urge you to do the right thing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, thank you. We have our next speaker. Let's see, I'm having a little trouble reading the writing. Is this Enner?
Enner Johnson.
Oh, yes.
Hi, thank you. My name is Etta Johnson. I'm a community organizer of Oakland. I want to thank Tanya Love and for supporting me throughout this incident. I have been very much active with homelessness for some years, and I work with Keith Carson on homeless incidents, with along with Elaine Brown, trying to correct the homeless problems. Never once did I know that I would be there. I do too much work on different situations, trying to solve different, making sure everybody else's lives is better, but didn't know mine would come to a halt somewhat, but I still don't give up. I'm looking forward to receiving my voucher as soon as possible. I suffered enough. I'm asking you, Mr. Johnson, I was granted. Like I said, there's so many things that other people within Oakland Housing Department you can use the money on. It was an expensive case, but I still will never give up. But I hope that you can find it in your heart. I said I forgive you. That's all I can do. I forgive for the pain and all this that I have suffered. You don't know how it is. It's not homeless. This is a federal disaster, what people in Oakland, California are suffering. And it needs to be brought to the federal level. And I know a lot of you know this. It should be more affordable houses. All these buildings coming up, it's just 7 units out of all of the buildings that will be affordable for the people of Oakland. Low income to be able to get. But it's more people, it's thousands of people that are displaced in Oakland. And after I get back on the road, get home, I'm going to try to work with Oakland Housing to get this solved with the housing issues, the homelessness. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you. And so I hope you make the right decision. Thank you very much.
Okay, and we thank you. Oh, yeah, yes, you can.
Can I come back up here?
Etta?
Yes.
All right, I'm here.
That's what I'm asking.
Oh, okay. So we will have to cancel that. Apparently, Marlene is not allowed to ask questions due to the fact that there's litigation surrounding this.
Oh, but she's welcome to ask me any other question.
No, we understand.
She don't have to ask it on the litigation. You know, I'm here to fight about, I mean, you know, to talk about my litigation. I know that's kind of secret, but, you know, she knows that I come out, I'm very much active in the communities, so perhaps she might want to ask a question on that also. Is that?
No, I don't think that that,
I'll go with
I don't
go
think
with
that that's what election. She's had, so thank you. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, let's see, and we had one other card. Is this Enner?
This was actually for an item.
Now,
so if you
I was just
going to
say, since you
yeah.
are...
That's for an item on the agenda.
Since
so when we
this is with the project-based vouchers, perhaps we'll just see if there are any questions. Would that be...
call it when
is
we
that
get
what
to see
you prefer?
If he wants to. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good. Excellent. Okay, then we are now moving on to new business. Item A.
Item A is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to appoint Erica Parker to the City of Oakland Community Police Advisory Board for a term of 3 years and to make the appropriate referral to the mayor and the city council for appointment. I strongly recommend the board's approval of Ms. Parker in this role. I'm grateful for her willingness to be here tonight. Raise your hand, Ms. Parker. And also to do this job on behalf of all of the residents of Oakland. I don't know if you want to get up and just say a couple of words, but I'm grateful that you're here.
Good afternoon, commissioners. First, I would just like to say thank you for appointing me. And I thank you, Eric, Lenita, Chief, Patricia, and Andreas for you guys' continuous support. And thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do we have a motion?
Can I say something?
Oh, certainly.
Could you come back up, please?
Yeah. Okay, so as you know, I support this. And the reason why I support it is last month I had the liberty of being able to be with you at the listening session. And I learned a lot about you. And what I learned a lot about you is your passion and dedication to our community. And I thank you for that. I have two questions for you. In the bio, this is what I read. And I want to know, in the bio, it says that it's impressive. You want to give back to the community, help our community. How do you want to do that?
So, in the event of giving back to the community, Oakland Housing Authority and Alameda County Social Services have poured so much into me, mm-hmm. as far as helping me through my educational and employment journey. And I want to be able to give that back and pour into my participants, my FSS caseload, family self-sufficiency, and supportive services caseload. I have the opportunity to pour into them and share with them resources that's going to better them and that's going to help them to their journey of successful self-sufficiency.
Okay, my last question. I was at the NCPC meeting on Thursday in East Oakland, mm-hmm. and with the mayor, the mm-hmm. mayor was there, mm-hmm. and the residents were talking about the need to appoint people from the community.
For community, you said?
The need to appoint people from our community. Mm-hmm. And as I sat there listening to that, realizing I had my board packet, I said, oh wow, we need Erica. We need Erica in that seat. And the more that I heard the residents talking about that, it helped me understand why we need more residents in the community.
Thank you.
Okay, the last thing I want to say, I appreciate that you've got your master's degree mm-hmm. in public administration.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you're dealing with a child that's kind of medically challenged.
I have a son who has special needs. Uh-huh. He has an intellectual disability. Okay. And I don't teach him that. Mm-hmm. I don't treat him as such,
okay.
but it's there. So with that, I teach Michael, okay, you are unique mm-hmm. in your own way. Do not allow your disability mm-hmm. to stumble you and to keep you from achieving whatever success you want to achieve in life. Mm-hmm. So it's a joy to be able to watch him grow up into the man that he has become. Now he's successfully graduated with honors from Oakland Tech High School.
Okay.
He is now achieving his first year in Laney Community College. Mm-hmm. He's also a part of the Job Plus program. Okay. Successfully, he is working on his first year of employment with Safeway.
Okay.
So I'm teaching him that you can become whatever it is you want to become in life. And I'm hoping that what I'm teaching him as well, that I'm able to inspire our participants and what I'm able to learn from the meetings, I'm able yes. to share with our participants as well.
And that's why I asked that question, that you're able to give that back into
yes.
the community and let people know that they can make a difference too. All right, so I welcome you aboard to this commission.
Thank you.
Are we ready to move the motion?
Okay, item has been moved.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none. Carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners. And thank you, Erica Parker.
Okay, now we're going on to item B.
Item B is presentation on review of the Oakland Housing Authority Police Department's 2018 Resident Opinion Survey, and I'd like to invite both the chief and the captain up to give a presentation, walk us through some of the things that they have learned from this survey.
Good evening, Commissioners. Carol DuPlessis, Chief of Police.
Good evening, Commissioners. James Williams, Captain of the Oakland Housing Authority Police Department.
We did this presentation about 3 years ago. Some of you who are on the board probably remember. We actually conduct a survey of our residents every 3 years, and we use it as a learning tool for us. These surveys are actually done live. We send our police service aides out, and we don't send the police officers at all because we want the truth, whether it's good or bad, and that way we can begin to try to learn from whatever the residents tell us. Nor do we shield it. You know, we get out there and we try to get the young groups. We might have groups that hang out that we might suspect that are not doing what they're supposed to do. We still go out and survey them. We want to know exactly what everyone thinks. This year, I'm proud to say that we actually surveyed 799 residents at 799 locations. We did a massive amount, sent teams out to try to generate as much information as we can. And we're fairly pleased with the information that we received, just not from the police's standpoint, but there's things that you'll see in the survey from the perspective of even property management and resident services that you can see that a lot of our initiatives are working. So even if I forget, I do want to congratulate our Office of Property Operations and FCP because they're great partners in our initiatives, and without them, there's no way in the world we can get the results that we get. So with this, I'm going to take you through some of the slides that we have in the surveys and actually go through some of the purposes that we have for this. First off, the methodology, it's very specific. There are useful tools, and we want them to be nothing more, nothing less than a platform for learning. We can't improve what we don't know. One of the main things that we're very clear on is that we're a police department for our residents. It's not our job to assume what they want. It's for us to listen and to do what they say. We're not here to shove anything down their throats. And we really try our best, and we've been doing this for a while. Just to let you know, this is actually the sixth survey we've done. We started doing these back in 2001. So it's they have been fairly incredible, and they have been improving each year. Residents who participated, they were asked to respond to 31 questions. And, you know, I wish I can go back and thank all 799 because it wasn't an easy task for them to sit there and answer 31 questions. But it involved OHAPD performance, their resident community involvement, which is really big for us, and I'll make some comments regarding that later. Residents' concern on crime and safety, recommendations and observations of the police department, and as well as the Oakland Health Authority Dispatch and Communications Center, their first point of time when they're calling into us, and overall agency performance. Now, we conducted the survey at every one of our AMPs, large public housing site, all of our OB AMPs, as well as all of our third-party managed properties. We wanted to make sure that we covered it all the way through. We actually had four participants from the Housing Choice Voucher Program came into our lobby. We didn't lose that chance also. So when they came in, we just asked them, do you want to participate? And they did, and they provided some information to us in regarding that. They didn't all answer every question, but the majority of them did. They answered the ones that they felt were appropriate for them, and we actually encouraged them to do so. Most questions, we generally had at least 775 answers to 775 people to answer to them. So with that, 799 residents represented 799 households were surveyed. 36% were male, 64% were female. 16% were between the ages of 18 and 26. Again, we just didn't want to go after elderly or certain groups. We want to make sure we got a collection of all age groups. 27% were between the ages 27 to 39 years, 21% between 40 and 51, 36% were 51% or older. 437 of the 55% did have some form of contact with OHAPD during that time period. Now, OHA's performance. And you guys all have the complete survey, so if there's any other questions you want to ask at the end of the survey for questions that I did not cover under my presentation, feel free to ask. But we asked the question that I feel OHAPD officer concerned about and want to solve my specific issue. Of the 797 answers, 79% said yes, they do, which is incredible to me because most people, they actually want you to solve their problem also. You know, so they do recognize that even though we can't solve every problem that they have, that they do recognize that we are concerned and we're trying our best to do whatever they need and satisfy their needs. Question three talked about our attitude and behavior toward community members. 84% of those surveyed said that they feel that we displayed good attitude and good behavior, which is really great for me because I'm not out there. So it tells me a lot in regards to what my officers are doing when I'm not looking. OHAPD staff, that they come in contact with our professional in demeanor and appearance. 92%, 797 people answered that question that said that yes, that they are professional in demeanor and appearance as they are at sites. And then overall competency of OHA officer, 84% felt our officers were competent. Very good figures, and I'm very pleased with that, especially in the environment of today where generally a lot of people, they don't like police. You know, and, you know, I can't, quite frankly, I do understand. There has been a lot of videos and things out there that I can see why they might. But, you know, our officers, they do their best to make those relationships with our residents and with the community in order to shield that and to make sure that they know that there is a partnership. Now, this is great that we can say these from a survey, but I always feel that there needs to be some form of validation in regard to this. So one thing that we look at, and I know a lot of you hear the term bias-based profiling, and the profiling of particular races and groups. We do look at this. I actually produce a report for Eric every year that we actually talk about OHAPD stop data. And here's a chart where I'm showing the traffic stops and pedestrian stops. And where you see, and like a lot of other agencies, that African Americans are much higher stopped than other races. However, when you look at searches conducted, you can look at the officer's behavior. Though there are the stops, it's very apparent that we're not trying to harass or do anything more or less than our job. So we're not searching, nor are we arresting at a high amount. We're geared to warnings and to make sure that people stay out of the criminal justice system and not to put them into it. The percentage of stops and race, again, predominantly show African Americans. Now, you might say, well, this is what I see on TV. I see this in Berkeley. I see this in a lot of other areas. But then when you look at our demographics of what we have, we might be one of the very few that's actually matching the people that we service. And when you look across the line that our stop data in red versus what's in blue, the OHA demographics, our performance and our stop data is pretty much matching who we represent. So we're not going outside of the lines and we're not policing something other than we should not. We're policing within our communities, and it's there. Now, I don't believe that the numbers should be necessarily you're overstopping one group. I believe a lot of it also has to do with how you're treating that group, and I think the survey is one way of supporting that. I also believe another way of supporting that is when we start looking at other aspects of our policing process. Two things we do look at, and if you've heard these terms, explicit and implicit biases, one of which is traditional prejudice and attitudes that people have, overt racism, comments or explicit examples of racism versus implicit bias would be unconscious feelings, perceptions, attitudes that officers and staff might not know. And regardless of that, we have to look at that. Now, with the incorporation of body cameras, we do take a look at these. All the supervisors in our department annually are made to look at least 5 videos of their staff and produce reports on those 5 videos, just random. That's in addition to every single day they have to look at various stops, but we give a criteria for analysis for the supervisor to look at. After those are done, we actually take a non-involved sergeant and we make them look at 100 videos and a collection of every of a number of officers in the department. Actually, every officer is looked at and reviewed. Now, when we look at these, we're looking at communication skills, and I'll tell you some of the results. In 98 cases that we looked at, the officer was polite in the entire county. In 3 cases, the officer's communication by our extreme was considered fair. I'm sure that some others might say they think it was fine, but not by ours. And there are things that we do address with our officers. And in each one of these, we did speak to our officers. The final disposition of these were 2% resulted in arrests. Again, we're not big on wanting to put people in the justice system. 69% resulted in persons being admonished and released. That's what we want. We want to issue warnings, and we want officers to use discretion and police by the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. 27% result in citations being issued. 1% result in a citation being issued in lieu of arrest. That's part of Prop 47. And 1% result in a crime report for future prosecution. Now, in addition to that, we also take a look at who's complaining, our citizen complaints internal affairs process. And last year, we had 2 citizen complaints, which is just outstanding for us. That's compared to 4 complaints filed in 2016 and 5 complaints that were filed against our officers in 2015. None of these complaints, except for one in 2017, alleged any level of bias-based profiling. In the one stop that the officer did allege, he felt this particular officer stopped him, was stopping and citing African Americans at a higher rate in a specific area of the city than any others, and then also said that the Oakland Housing Authority Police Department was doing the same. So we initiated the complaint against the officer as well as one against the department. We investigated, and the result of the investigation showed that within a 2-year period, there were less than 10 enforcement actions in this one particular area that the person stated, none of which resulted in a citation that we issued. So we talked to the guy, and he was very nice. As a matter of fact, he was homeless, and we invited him to the department. We gave him some homeless kits and some other things and dealt with it. But again, we took a look at it. But with all this, there's really nothing that we saw that really triggered ourselves to show that the result of that portion of the survey that and the information that we obtained from the residents were inconsistent with what we knew. I even monitor and I look at body camera footage, and the one thing at the end of you'll see at most traffic stop that the officers will literally tell people at the end, he said, I really want to thank you for your cooperation with this and you have a great day, and they are polite. So I'm appreciative of the Housing Authority police officers. We have a great group, and they will keep up this performance. Now, resident engagement and safety concerns is another area that we took a look at, that we asked quite a few questions. Number 6 was, do you participate in neighborhood community police and council meetings? And 792 people responded to this, and 501 said yes. Now, that is absolutely incredible, especially tonight where you were talking about the NCPC meeting you attended, as well as Erica Parker being going on to the community policing advisory board.
I think the slide might be either reversed or you're wrong. I thought 291 attended and 501 still didn't attend the policing council meetings. So if we can check that, I may have made an error in the color when I was switching them.
I'll check it.
This morning.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, either way, it's an incredible number, because I'll tell you what, 10 years ago, we couldn't find 30 people that attended. As a matter of fact, the presentations I made to the Community Policing Advisory Board, it was one of my criticisms that I had regarding the NCPC meetings, where the City of Oakland did a really poor job and continued to do a poor job of integrating Housing Authority residents into the neighborhood crime solving problems. There have been instances that Patricia Wells and I, we attended community policing meetings, and they were very upset that our residents were even there. Very upset. As if they were not part of the community, which was completely wrong, absolutely wrong. But nevertheless, you know, even to have people attending at such a higher, and you're right, Eric, I don't know which way it is, but I'll tell you what, I'll take the 291. Yeah. It's 291?
That's accurate, yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's my fault, Eric. I'll take the 291. It's still just an incredible number that we have, and it tells us that we're actually moving in the right direction. And it's one of the things that we really need to focus on. But again, I can't take the credit. A lot of the credit has to go to our FCP department and the community engagement that they're doing in trying to get people linked and empowering our residents to be part of the community, part of the city. And we need more of that. It has to grow. That's the only way that we're going to resolve a lot of the issues we have.
I've heard that, yes.
I remember. This next question, it talks about residents. Can they rely on other residents to watch their unit while they're away? And I will tell you, this new routinely has been roughly around 36-40% where they said yes. It's been absolutely low. And again, moving in the right direction, developing more sense of community at the properties, and residents feeling a lot more comfortable about what their surroundings and being part of the community helps improve that. They need to feel safe and they need to feel good about where they live. Do they report suspicious behavior and other concerns in their community? 66% says yes, that they do report, so they're not being silent about it. It's another one that routinely had been low, where you had a lot of community members not wanting to be involved in the problem-solving solution. Lighting sufficient. This is another one that routinely has been very low. And, you know, I do want to thank OPO has been just outstanding in installing LED lights on our properties and really making them bright and making residents feel very safe. But 74%, you know, that say there's sufficient lighting and they feel safe at night around their properties. Absolutely incredible. Is crime mainly committed in your surrounding area? 28% says not necessarily on site. It's the community. It's what's going on around them that's trying to trickle itself onto the properties. And our properties are victimized by a lot of the issues within the community. Move to communications. The communication staff, were they polite and they carried themselves in a professional manner? 351 and 367 say they agree and strongly agree that our comm staff is very professional and treat people respectfully. The communication staff that they spoke to were informed and assisted with their problem question. And just like the law enforcement officers on the other end, you have 367 and 369 agree and strongly agree. They feel as if the people they talk to want to help and want to resolve their issue. Now, the overall rating that we had, where we asked them to rate the police and communication staff, 1 out of 10 stars. And for law enforcement, they were rated 8.37 out of 10 stars, or 83% rating, and communications were rated at 8.74, or 87% overall rating for professionalism. And I'm very happy with this, so are my staff. Of course, you have our communication staff right now that are bragging, saying the community likes them better than our officers. But nevertheless, at 80-some percent, I'll take both. So I'm very happy with the amount. 799 people surveyed. Again, that's for our community. That's a massive amount of people to provide this information. And again, in testing the information also against some of the other analysis that we conduct, I believe the information. I absolutely believe it. I think that we're on the right path. But again, making a path for learning, there are things we need to work on. Today, we actually issued our goals and objectives for next year to all of the squads that incorporated field operations, admin support, investigations, communications. There are certain things within this survey that have been incorporated in the goals and objectives for our staff for the next year. Various things that we absolutely want them to continue working on so we can continue to have improvement, or even if there's no improvement to be made in some areas, you know, it might be as good as we get, but nevertheless, we want to keep it this way. We don't want to lose ground on anything that we do. One of the biggest portions that we want to continue growing on, and one of the main aspects of growth for the department and for our residents, is the continuation of getting residents involved in the community. Yes. That has to happen. There is no way in the world that we're ever going to successfully have safe communities, and I'm not just talking about the large site, I'm talking about the scatter sites too, without getting them involved. And we need to keep pressing forward with that. So that is going to be a goal for everyone in the police department, not only next year, but for the next 3 years until we do the next survey. And it's going to be one of the things we want to focus on to make sure that we move and we continue moving in the right direction. So commissioners, I try to keep it shorter than anything Dominica's ever done. If you have any questions.
Any questions?
Okay. I just wanted to start by acknowledging that these are really some amazing statistics in any police department, and just pleased that they exist here in this department. So since I wasn't here 3 years ago, with last time this survey occurred, one thing that would be lovely for someone like me is seeing how these shifts have occurred, like what it looked like 3 years ago versus what it looks like today. I think it's helpful for us just in being able to see where in particular some of those improvements have been made.
Well, if you're interested, I can send it to Eric Johnson, and if he doesn't mind, he can send it out to you.
Excellent. Yeah. Thank you. And I guess just asking your opinion in this, if mm-hmm. there are anything that your department engaged in particular that stood out for you as really contributing to seeing a positive shift in these numbers overall, if there's like one or two things that really stand out for you, and then also in appreciation of what an uphill battle it is for a department to be able to kind of given the challenges with the news and what's happening from so many different dynamics, what you see as your greatest challenge in being able to continue to replicate an upward trajectory?
Well, it's a great question. And first I will tell you, I think most would want to point to most of the crime prevention events we have, you know, whether it's the Christmas Winter Wonderland we do, or the block parties, or all these bike excursions and various things we have. And I don't think that really does it. I really don't. I think the main portion of it that's the largest part of success is what the officers are doing right now in getting out of their cars and making sure that the residents understand them and understand what their job is and making sure that we are connecting with them. The attitude years ago in law enforcement was really more of a us against them mentality. And there was never really a strong connection. The community policing was a program. It was not a dominating operating philosophy that most agencies really bought into. It was a buzzword. It was something that we had to do because it's what was expected. But nevertheless, as we brought officers into the department, we taught them the same way. We taught them the same things, and we spoke the same language to them as it did for me when in the 1980s. Now, I've made a comment to the County Chiefs Association, and it didn't go over very well other than a few people came up after. But last year, the president of the International Conference of Chief Police talked about, you know, injustices that were that was done by police. And, you know, and I really took it as if a lot of people just assume, well, we're talking about the civil rights movement in the 60s. And I came back and said, no, I think a lot of it was about the time when I came up back in the 1980s. And I remember exactly how we treated people when I first became a police officer. I did. And it was none of this. It was, I had the badge and you were a citizen. You just do what I say. That's what it is. That philosophy has changed. It is not in our department. You know, Eric and I joke at times where we talk about our hiring practices not having laterals, only bringing people in brand new, people who don't know any better. They only know one thing, how we do work within the police department. And you see me constantly in our lineup. You see me constantly with the officers in there. I don't stand off. I walk in the parking lot when they're getting their car because I serve as a constant reminder to them of exactly who we are and what we do. And making sure that they understand that, that residents of Oakland Housing Authority, they're our friends also, and we will treat them that way. And our officers have bought into that. They completely have bought into it. And I think, again, you know, doing the block parties and those other things, you know, those are just rewards at the end of the day that I think people come out and they involve themselves in. But I really do believe that it's what they do every day when they go knock on the door, they answer a call, whether they can resolve that issue or not, how they treat you, how they make you feel every single day is what the bread and butter is. And it's very difficult for us right now and because, quite frankly, you know, law enforcement is demonized right now in society. It's very much demonized. It's, you know, and we just don't get that on community and calls. You know, I will be the first to tell you, I get that at home, you know, from cousins and, you know, it's, and nieces and nephews. I little ones running around saying, my mama said, we don't like the police. And, you know, it's, you know, and I feel like saying, well, tell your mama to take you home, but I can't do that. But nevertheless, it's difficult, and we have to remind ourselves that the only way it's going to change is that we keep teaching people and we tell the truth about what's out there. We don't shield ourselves behind the problems within our society. We don't shield ourselves behind what we see in video. Captain Williams shows videos of every one of these police shootings or things that we see on TV. And when he shows these videos, it's not one of which we're protecting the officers. It's one of which saying, this is exactly what you don't do. This is not what we do. So long answer, and I apologize. I hope I hit the point, but you know, this it's really a question that, that we're constantly saying to our own staff, and we're constantly reminding them because we want to beat it into
I would just add the biggest challenge, he said, in brief, is that we have to attract the right people to be officers. And we, you know, we need police officers in our community. We need them to be part of our community. I think that our police department does a sort of heroic job at becoming integrated into the neighborhoods we serve. They're known, they're trusted by our residents. And that took years. And to keep that, you know, our biggest challenge right now is just filling vacancies, getting people to attract it into the profession, given the general consensus and what's going on in sort of policing in America. And the only, and the real solution is not just to change the way we police, but also change who we're hiring as police yes. officers. And that, to me, is the biggest challenge we face.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Wait.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Yes. Chair and Vice Chair defer to all of the other members.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Chief. It's a pleasure to see this report. I'm so glad that our police department is doing great things in the city of Oakland. I just wanted to dig a little deeper into the stop data, not to ask the usual questions, but to dig deep into maybe the symptoms underneath why our black men and black females are being stopped so much. Is it residents versus non-residents? Is it around a particular location? Have you thought about deeper community engagement to be able to reduce those numbers? Because there is like a steep difference between others. And are you saying that in these particular areas, there's that much more African Americans that live there, and that's the reason? Or it can't just be that simple, right? There must be some underlying.
It is that simple. It is very much that simple. It's these areas that we predominantly police are higher level of African Americans. Mm-hmm. If I all of a sudden started seeing higher numbers of Asians or whites or others, then I probably have a pretty serious issue about exactly what are my officers doing and whether they're policing the area that they're in. It is my expectation that our numbers should reflect our population and that we are absolutely policing the areas of where the people in our population live. And we're not the city. We're not spread out all over where we have higher concentration than any other race. It's right now, it's African-Americans is the highest population we have.
Is it residents versus non-residents?
It's residents, it's friends. It's majority, it's a lot of people who claim to be friends or family. It's a lot of unrelated male adults who, you know, are trying to involve themselves into our residents. But again, it's the data is there, but you know, it's going back and looking at what we're doing with it. I think it's a big question.
Yes.
And I think a lot of what people expect is as a result of the stop that people are being placed in the juvenile justice system or the criminal justice system, and they're just not. They're not. We actually have a directive that says use of discretion. It's actually a policy for the department, again, where alternative arrest has to be paramount for this, where warnings have to come first, where we do not want to place people. We want to try to rid ourselves of the problem. A lot of these where we looked at recently, some data for loitering, something as simple as that, I believe for a two-year period of 2,300 loitering incidents that we had where we stopped people, there was only about 200 repeaters. The majority of them were one time. We did what we had to say. We talked to them. We admonished them. We let them on their way with a warning, and it generally cures itself. Okay. It usually cures itself.
All right. Thank you. I think you have sort of answered this, but particularly to this, what did you learn from this particular part of the data specifically?
Well, I learned that we are on the right track. I'm not surprised. I believe strongly that our police officers and our communication staff are outstanding. I believe that they do a good job. I see an overwhelming, I see them overwhelmingly want to help. I see them coming up with ideas on their own time. And you know, doing the Mother's Day barbecue or the PAC program or doing the pancake social, these are not my ideas. I can't claim these. You know, it's them. It's what they see the need for. You know, last week, one of the sergeant and three officers, they said that, you know, unless somebody's blind, there's a homeless encampment on 22nd Avenue and East 12th Street. It's huge. They said, unless we're blind and we don't see it, they're our neighbors whether we want to or not. And maybe we need to go introduce ourselves and do a pancake breakfast there. Okay. That's what they believe, and that's what they think. And that's how they view themselves as community members first, housing providers second, police officers last. That's how they view themselves. So I learned we're on the right track. I also learned we have a lot of work to do.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Did you have a question, Marlene?
Yeah, Commissioner? Commissioner?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bear with me. I have four questions. Okay, first of all, I want to say how much I love you guys and appreciate what you do. And I know your jobs are hard, but I know you make a difference. At my recent attendance to the NCPC meeting on this Thursday with the mayor, I learned a lot. I learned a lot about our residents out there and how they have great ideas. And if we just listen to them, we can implement them. The other thing I learned a lot is the need to have more community at those meetings. I learned that night too. But most importantly, I want to say this. As I was reading this, and I was here in 2015, I want to know from you, Chief, 358 residents, what changed in 2015? We served, it says, a total of 790. 799 residents were served compared to 358. What changed?
I don't think anything more than we just determined that we needed a larger volume of people to really understand what reality was. Okay. We thought 350 last time was a lot, and we actually decided that we wanted to try to hit 800.
Okay.
And to do more, you know, regardless of what it was.
Yeah, I think it was the drive of staff also. Staff wanted to go out and engage our residents. They were coming in on their days off on overtime to get surveys done. They said, I want to go out and survey this certain app. It was a dedication of the staff to pull those exceeding numbers from 2015.
Okay. Three more questions. Okay, I attended the safety town hall that was July 19th at Laney College with the chief of police at a panel discussion, and the mayor was there. And what the chief of police handed out at that meeting, she handed out a letter, July 19th, dear community, I'm just going to read a line of this. In the letter it says, in the Genesis, and you know what happened in the Genesis. In the Genesis was the beginning. It says, in the Genesis of the Oakland Police Department, reform is rooted in historical community distrust and harm caused by inequitable and racially desperate policing. As I read that, and I said, but change is coming. Hello? Out there? Change is coming, right? Change is coming. And then as I look at the traffic stop data report, and as I saw more African Americans being stopped, I wanted to know why. And then when I looked at our report and saw kind of the same thing, I wanted to know why. Why are we, I'm African American, why are we being stopped more? And one more question. Do you do any data exchange with the chief of police in doing this stuff?
No, I do not.
You don't?
No, I don't. I don't put our data out anywhere,
okay,
other than in-house. The interpretation of data, uh-huh, is very subjective. You can,
okay,
take this information anywhere you want to.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of very few that were in favor of Proposition 953. That required all the police departments in this state to produce their data. And my opinion was, if everybody produced it, then they could see that it's the same everywhere. It is absolutely the same. But I think the difference is, where you look at the city of Oakland versus you look at us, is our population, and that's why I put that chart of where we match versus theirs.
Okay.
They're not matching their population. And there, so, okay, it's a very different question for them as it is us. You know, it's, you know, and I don't want to answer that question for Chief Kirkpatrick. I'm not quite sure if there really is a good answer for this, other than the fact that I think she realizes that,
mm-hmm,
there are areas that she needs to work on,
yes,
where she needs to maintain a balance,
yes,
between. You know, if you're going to put your people where crime's being committed,
mm-hmm,
you know, stops are not necessarily, mm-hmm, a bad thing, independent,
okay,
upon what you're doing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many areas of explanation I think anybody would have to get into to try to explain exactly what this means. It becomes dangerous, and, it's,
mm-hmm,
and it needs to be more of a global conversation for those to understand exactly what it means. Like I said, for us, you know, what does it mean and what's a stop? What's happening with these is the big question, and that is,
yes,
at the end of the day, what the most important thing is.
Mm-hmm.
Police are supposed to stop. They're supposed to contact. They, mm-hmm, have to detain based upon law. But the California law does not require police officers to have to arrest other than under various circumstances.
Okay.
So it is engaging in these conversations that we make with whether it's male, black, male, white, female, mm-hmm, Asian, whatever race it is, it's of most importance in what comes out of that. And again, I don't want to compare our information to theirs, mm-hmm, or Berkeley's, or, mm-hmm, a lot of other places because I can't speak to their enforcement practices. But again, you got to layer your population on top of those numbers and see those anomalies. But when you saw the layering on top of us, it was all headed pretty much in the right direction.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
My last question. As we do more community engagement, getting the community out to the NCPC meetings, making them feel respected when they get to the meetings, making them feel their voice is being heard is really important. Even as I said at the meeting, hearing the residents share their ideas, which were phenomenal, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is a resident talking about this. Great. And we were listening, and the mayor was hearing them, and the police chief out there, they were listening. They were not like dissing them like, oh, be quiet, you have nothing to say. They were really being heard, and I appreciate that. I'm hoping that the more that we let our residents know their voice matters, more of them will get out to those meetings. And I know I have one more question. Now, I know the police department does a police academy training or something where someone can go out and see what you guys do. Do you ride alongs? Do we do that?
We have been talking about putting our own police academy on for a long time.
Okay.
We just have not gotten to that point yet. But
okay.
It is still one of our goals that we absolutely want to do that.
Wonderful. And
we hosted the RAP a couple of years ago down at the police station. We showed them. But we really want to do something a little more comprehensive. Now,
wonderful.
One thing I will say to, Oakland, they have a really good resident academy, and they're doing some phenomenal things. We have a better youth program, though.
I agree.
Right now, we have 16 kids that are in the youth academy for the Cadet and Explorer program.
Okay.
And 2 weeks ago, they were in a competition that we're engaging them in. So, though they got the bragging rights, and we'll get there on the other one, we do have a much better program for our youth.
Thank you, Chief. Yeah. Thank you. Do you guys do anything with Margaret Dixon?
Pardon me?
Margaret Dixon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You do? Okay, so I close by saying this. I know change is coming, and I'm hopeful, and I'm ready to see it.
All right,
so thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Yeah, hey, Chief. I was just curious, how did you select your sample of people? The 800 people that you surveyed, how did you identify who you wanted to survey?
We didn't. It was just random. It could be people that we saw at the site.
I see.
We went out, literally knocked on doors.
Okay.
So
it wasn't random in the sense of a random number generator giving you addresses, but it was random in terms of just going out and seeing, let's contact 800 people.
We got who we wanted. We got who we could at the sites. A lot of people, they didn't want to give surveys. Probably the total contacted for this survey was probably around 1,200. A lot of people, they don't want to do it. They don't want to give the information. It takes too long, or for various other reasons. In one area in Lockwood, though, we purposely tried to survey a particular area because of some issues we had.
Right.
We can only get 8 residents of roughly 40 to talk to us. Okay. We learned a lot about that, and again, no surprises. We realized that there's a lot of work we need to do there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, a situation like that, I would interpret that as interesting.
Could be fear factor.
Yeah, it's something that just kind of like, how about that?
Yeah.
Because that could tend to bias the number. If people that really are scared of you won't talk to you, that would shift shift the numbers around a little.
But the nice also thing is people who have generally something bad to say will say it also.
Yes,
because
right,
there were
right,
people in there
right.
saying, I think you're horrible, you do a bad job, need to get a new police chief, fire him, or whatever. Yeah, but they will say it.
So what was your main takeaway in terms of, because usually we do these surveys to try to get better. So what was your main takeaway of, hey, this is what we maybe want to focus on and improve and do a little better at?
Again, it's the resident engagement portion of it.
Yeah.
For us, it's resident engagement. I, I believe that what we do internally as far as how our officers treat residents needs to remain. I believe that we don't want to slip. I believe that's we're really doing a good job. The main thing is listening to the residents and the resident engagement portions of it, and paying attention to those questions in regard to the issues that were occurring at their properties. Those are the portions we want to pay attention to. Andreas, Patricia, Eric, Lenita, and I, we met in operations last week and started looking at some of those questions. And, you know, we'll continue to do more comprehensive review because, again, they're just not us. You know, our Office of Property Operations and FCP, they're entwined in this. So the solution to this, as well as the success of this, has to rely on all of our departments working together to try to better establish the best plan to improve these things. But the resident engagement is the biggest. That is the bread and butter of really resolving and making a healthy community.
Yes, yes. And I just have one final sort of general observation, but I mean, I've had a little bit of experience with police departments in various ways. I mean, I was an NCPC chair, and I did some other stuff, and I've been in police cars and used to go downtown and get briefed on things by OPD. What is going on with our police department here is really different than the norm. Actually, I would classify it as spectacular. You just do not have police departments that perform like this with regard to the community. And now I understand that you may have some advantage, and I'm not sure about this because it's a smaller department. You know, you don't have like 6,000 officers or something to be able to control. But still, I just think that with the results that are being produced here, I mean, like you look at this chart here and you see that traffic stops, or not traffic stops, but in stops of people engagement matches the demographics. I mean, almost perfectly. I mean, that is very strange right there. And then to have such a positive response. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I kind of feel like if it just sits here and gets concealed, it can't help the, I mean, the world needs help is what I'm saying. And you're definitely on to something that can provide some of that help. So I mean, I'm just throwing that out there as wondering if there's some way that we might be able to do that. Because, you know, the Housing Authority has been a leader in so many areas. A lot of people have been trying to follow what we're doing in many different ways, like what we're doing with family and community partnerships and developments and this sort of thing. And this now is exactly the same thing. So you don't have to answer that. I just want to throw that out.
I'll answer. We do share the information, but I don't think necessarily sharing it publicly is the best way of doing it. New York Police Department, they copied our forum process, our lineup process for the forum that we have, and using it right now in all their precincts. That's the largest police department in the country. They got that from us. Captain Williams and I, we did a conference call with the ACLU in D.C. to try to revamp their trespassing processes.
I see.
We're hosting the New Orleans Chief Friday. He's coming for the NARO conference, so he'll be at our community meetings. But, you know, publicly, the interpretation of this is not what we should do and put it out there because it can be misinterpreted quite a bit. Yes. The other part of it is that, you know, we tell our officers that, you know, we work for the Housing Authority. And again, you know, we need to make sure that the view is housing first, yes, that we are housing providers. We're not police first.
Yes.
And I don't think that's the message that we ever want to send from the Housing Authority. Mm-hmm. This department has to run stealth, and we have to stay out of the eyes and stay off the radar and do things very well, do things right, and be silent heroes, and not put this information out there.
Yeah, but I think you've just now described what I think a lot of other police departments would benefit from doing that exact thing.
Well, I think you're seeing it in Oakland. I think OPD has done a tremendous transformation, and I think that they're doing a phenomenal job. And I think as they continue, you'll start seeing more and more of this. I think Ann Kirkpatrick is she's dialed in. She gets it. I think the last chief, Sean Nguyen, I think he had the department move in that direction. So
yeah.
I think you'll see more of that. But I think for us, I think we need to stay stealth.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I thank you very much for your fine efforts here. And that was a great, a really splendid presentation. I think it's very important that you are doing this kind of follow-up work with the community to continue to improve, because that's really feedback loops are the path to getting better.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. There's no more questions.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Captain.
Thank you.
All right, we're now moving to item C.
Moving on to item C.
Do we need to make a motion on this last item?
No. No, it's just a receive and file. Item C is consideration of 7 resolutions authorizing the executive director to conditionally award 195 project-based vouchers to the following 7 projects: Aurora Apartments, formerly MacArthur Apartments, 43 vouchers; Nova Apartments, 56 vouchers; West Grand and Bush, 28 vouchers; 34th and San Pablo, 25 vouchers; 2530 9th Avenue, 7 vouchers; 7th and Campbell, 20 vouchers; and 3801 MLK Family Housing, 16 vouchers. And I just want to point out that we have representatives from all the projects in the audience, and we can go around. Thank you guys for being here. We appreciate your presence. And also Christina Cansable Bay from the city of Oakland is here. And just to give you an idea, and I'll turn it over to Michelle. From Aurora, we have Michelle Munoz. Did I get that right? Munoz, yes. And Jimmy Silverwood, both in the audience. And from...
Where are they?
For Nova and Aurora. Raise your hands. Thank you.
Great.
West and Bush Phase 1. We have Anar Chu and Jerry Gajai. I don't know if there you are. Here as well for 34th and San Pablo. For Oakland Community Land Trust, we have Jake Rosen and Steve King. Yes, he's still here. 7th and Campbell, we have Elaine Brown, the CEO of the World Enterprises, Oakland and the World Enterprises. And from RCD, we have Jake Rosen. Hey, Jake. I'll turn it over to Andreas Manriquez and Michelle Hassan to do a brief presentation on the projects we're awarding.
Good evening, commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to turn it over to, I'm the Andreas Manriquez, Chief Operating Officer. I'll turn it over to Michelle for the presentation.
Good evening, commissioners. Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing. You do have before you a resolution to authorize a conditional award of 195 vouchers for 7 properties. What we thought we'd do is just present to you some overview around the projects and how we got here in terms of the city, NOFA, and our development policy. So in June 27th, 2005, the Board of Commissioners approved a provision to the authority's MTW plan, which allowed the authority to utilize other affordable housing competitions to award project-based voucher assistance. Specifically, the authority has the ability to award PVV assistance in conjunction with the City of Oakland's annual Notice of Funding Availability, or NOFA, competition for affordable housing funds. The authority has collaborated with the City of Oakland since 2006 to leverage resources so that affordable housing projects identified as City of Oakland priorities have the ability and opportunity to request PVVs. In the city NOFA, OHA is very clear and explicit that the development projects must review and support their projects based on the development policy of OHA. I'm going to do a quick overview of that policy. So the purpose of this policy is to outline the manner in which OHA will make decisions about the acquisition of land and or its participation in affordable housing rehabilitation, development, or redevelopment projects. There are policy baseline principles that were stated in the policy that was attached to the NOFA. It stated that OHA will first determine that development opportunities meet its 8 baseline principles and will then consider the extent to which a project or the acquisition of a potential development site meets its overarching goals in 3 areas. The areas that we look at are the overall impact, the neighborhood impact, the resident impact, and sustainability. So overall impact. What we're looking for are projects that will provide a significant benefit to affected tenants and the surrounding community. So tenants who are, if it's a rehab project, those that are living in the project, the property, as well as those individuals that live in the surrounding community. We're looking for projects that whose participation will strengthen communities by focusing on low-income and moderate-income populations that are underserved within the context of the local housing market. I think you're all aware of families who are having difficulty finding units that are affordable. Community benefit. OHA seeks to participate in projects that will have a benefit beyond the boundaries of the subject property. So we're looking how that project will impact in a positive manner that community. So individuals that live around that community, how is this project going to have a positive impact on their lives as well? Partnership and leverage. OHA seeks to support creative approaches, such as bringing together strong partnerships between development and service providers, or a variety of leverage partners that strengthen the overall financial feasibility of the project. So we're looking to see who are the developers partnering with, and how are they going to support the residents that are there in the property. Neighborhood impact. We're looking to see, does the project provide access to high quality education for our families, access to public transportation, to supportive services, and or other innovative programs. OHA is interested in projects which propose an innovative and sustainable approach to meeting the needs of the population served. Access to amenities such as grocery stores, fresh food options, banks, drugstores, libraries, and community centers and parks. We are always looking at resident safety and how is the project going to ensure that the residents in the site feel safe and that that property is not going to impact in a negative way those challenges that may already exist in the neighborhood. We're looking for access to healthy environment and health-related services. Are there community clinics or access to those clinics around the sites that are being served or on the site that the nonprofit provider may provide? We're looking for projects that help to integrate neighborhoods that are economically, racially, and culturally diverse. So will the projects provide service to anyone who lives in the city of Oakland? Because we do have a very diverse population. The other area that OHA is very interested in understanding how the partner will address is the resident impact. And so we're looking for the sustainability of resident services, which really do provide families and assist in their success when they lease up. So we're looking at, are the services based on the population that's being served? Is there a needs assessment conducted at the start of the project and revisited at appropriate intervals? That there's established partnerships with appropriate service providers? And that there is an identified mechanism by which these services will be funded so that they can be sustained over the course of our contracts, which are now 20 and up to 40 years. OHA is looking for economic integration within the property. So again, income mix within the property, when feasible, taking into consideration the size of the property and its location. Always we are looking for cost containment, that the partner is really taking into account what is really needed to ensure that these units can be built in a reasonable and justifiable in context of the local housing market. So again, if you saw the presentations that the partners presented in the board packets, they're speaking to these areas as it relates to OHA's development policy. And sustainability, again, OHA seeks to participate in projects that employ energy-efficient, environmentally friendly design materials and construction practices. OHA will consider the extent to which standards for operating the property in a maximally sustainable manner will be employed, and residents will be encouraged to make environmentally conscious choices. Everything from water uses, electricity, garbage, to just ensure that those operating practices are something that the partner has looked at. Financial sustainability. OHA is assessing the economic return on OHA's investment and the ability of a project to maintain the proposed level of management, services, and security over time. So again, we want these projects over the course of 5, 10, 20 years to continue to be a positive impact in the community. And we're looking for projects that can articulate that in their proposals. So the projects that come before you today, in your board packet, you will see 7 projects. We have 5 nonprofit developers here. You'll see the Aurora Apartments, which are requesting 43 project-based vouchers. The developer is Affirmed Housing. The project will be located at 657 West MacArthur at MLK Junior Way. It is 100% supportive housing for homeless individuals. The partner will be working with BATS, Bay Area Community Services, on site and doing outreach programs. If you know BATS, they're very highly capable and seen in the community as doing very good work. The Nova Apartments, again with Affirmed Housing, 56 units of total units. I think it's actually 57 with 56 PVV units, located in at 445 30th Street, which is a location that we haven't had PVVs. So we're very excited about that, right around the Peel Hill area. 100% supportive housing for homeless individuals, and on-site and outreach services by lifelong medical care. Again, if you are familiar with the services of Lifelong, very diverse services and definitely reach populations that are homeless and may have other challenges. The first Ebolsi project is West Grand and Brush Phase 1, and this is seeking 28 PVVs for a 59-unit property, and this is the first phase of that development. Again, located at 760 22nd Street at Brush Street, and it will serve homeless veterans and households earning 30% to 60% of area medium income. Ebolsi has a fairly robust services program, and they will have a resident services coordinator and will be partnering with Operation Dignity, who focuses on veteran services. Ebolsi is coming forward with another project for families at 34th and San Pablo. Many of you are aware of the California Hotel, and this would be near that site. Low-income families, again, our families just can't find housing in the community. And those services will be provided by Ebolsi on site. Our next project is 2530 9th Avenue. This is with a new partner, Oakland Community Land Trust. They're seeking 7 vouchers for a total of 15 units in the property. This is a project that CAHI owns, and it will serve low-income families. It is a rehabilitation project. Many of these projects are new construction, but this project is actually a rehabilitation of an existing site. Services will be provided by the Oakland Community Land Trust. We have a new partner as well with Oakland and the World Enterprises, a project at 7th and Campbell, seeking 20 PVVs for a total of 78 units. This site is on 7th Street, 1664 through 1676, in West Oakland, again, serving low-income families and homeless veterans. And they have a letter of intent from BOSS, who will provide various services at the site. Resources for Community Development is seeking 16 PVVs for a 32-unit complex. Again, families at 3801 MLK Way for low-income families, and RCD will provide its own resident services program. This is a map of where the properties are located. Again, definitely centered in the West Oakland downtown area, and just south of the east of the lake is the 9th Avenue location, which is a very difficult area to get affordable housing in. So 9th Avenue would be a terrific project for us to get hard units at that site, because it is almost impossible for our families to lease up there unless OP has units available for them. As you can see, again, maximizing transportation, accessibility to all of the libraries, transit, a number of the downtown area that families so seek to stay in. So we're very excited to bring this forth for 195 PVV vouchers. Questions?
I have a procedural question. Are we making a single motion? Okay. May I?
You may.
I move to adopt this motion.
I've been moved. Second?
I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any abstain? Oh, you
have some questions too.
Okay, I guess we're moving a little fast. Okay.
Well,
yeah, go ahead with the question.
Thank you. I'm very impressed with the parameters of the of how we're holding folks accountable. Mm-hmm. Completely impressed with them. It's like you've covered all the bases and everything that I believe that our commission wants to see when we build affordable housing in the city of Oakland. Thank you so much for that. I'm just not familiar with one of the developers, and you didn't identify it as a new partner. Mm-hmm. So I'm so grateful to Affordable Housing for building 100% supportive housing for homeless folks, because we totally need it. But I'm not sure who they are.
Okay.
It says they're out of San Diego, but what is their footprint in the city of Oakland?
So I have individuals from Affirm, and maybe they can give you an overview of what they've done in the past.
If you can step up to the mic over here and give me your name and title before
I
you
I have
talk.
Jimmy Silverwood, the vice president, and Michelle Munez, the assistant project manager.
Good evening. So I'm Jimmy Silverwood with Affirmed Housing, and I'm the Vice President of Acquisitions and Finance. So a little bit about Affirmed Housing. We've been around for 25 years. We're headquartered in Southern California, but we're doing work across the state of California. We've successfully completed about 5 developments in the Bay Area, so we are new to the Bay Area.
Okay.
Just today, we attended a groundbreaking in downtown San Jose for their first 100% supportive housing development in the downtown area. Mm-hmm. So we're very proud about that. We're new to Oakland. We're excited about Oakland. These two are our first projects in the city of Oakland.
Okay.
We are planning on opening an office in the Bay Area. So as of right now, Oakland's definitely in the mix for being that satellite office for us. So we're really excited for this opportunity to partner with the Housing Authority.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think my other question was actually the same kind of question for Oakland and the World Enterprises, just to know a little bit more about them and their... Hello, you're...
So we have Elaine Brown, the
yes.
CEO, and Ali
That's who I
Kashani,
thought that was.
The
Hi,
consulting
Ms. Brown.
Project manager here to speak about the project.
So your question is, you know, who are we? Well, just so you, we started about 4 years ago. It's a new nonprofit. We were able to acquire this property at 7th and Campbell. This
nice.
Area is, as you probably know, you have an Oakland Housing Authority facility there, project there at Campbell Village. But this is a food desert. There are not a lot of employment opportunities and so forth. So what we bring in our project is not only do we have housing, 79 units of affordable, 100% affordable housing, but we also have several businesses that are part of our mission to launch businesses for ownership by people in the community who are never probably going to get a job or unlikely to get a job, do job training. So we're partnering, for example, with building opportunities for self-sufficiency. But we also have a grocery store. We have an urban farm there now.
Excellent.
We are distributing vegetables organically grown to the community, and we're selling to Mandela Foods. So we are going to create a food grocery store there. We have a fitness center. We'll have a tech business where people be able to learn IT and so forth. And so we think that we're going to not only provide opportunities for housing, but also for employment and business ownership.
Wonderful.
And this is pretty much in the works. So we're really excited about the fact that we've been able to do this over a period of, well, we acquired that land on in November of 2014. And we have quite a bit of funding. We've gotten the city funding. We've gotten approval for $13 million in county funding. And so we're on our way to getting ourselves launched and sustained. The urban garden, just so you know, once we start to construct, once we complete the complex, will be raised to the roof, so it'll still be there.
Wonderful.
And able to provide product for not only the grocery store, but we'll have a juice bar, which I know is weird, but in the fitness center.
That's good. Oh, yeah. My God. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for explaining the project to me. It sounds incredible. And in that neighborhood, yeah. So needed. So
well, we're
you.
Also, one good thing about, we're on 7th, so we have a shuttle, a green-powered shuttle. We're going to be able to shuttle people back and forth within the community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm meeting tomorrow with Joel Laguerre about our shuttling Laney College students back and forth, so maybe they can also live there.
That's cool.
And we're 2 blocks from BART.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very cool. Awesome.
And I just had a... Just a comment.
You may.
I may. So, Ms. Brown, and what was the other gentleman's name?
Ali.
Ali? I just had a comment.
Ali Kashani is our housing project manager. He's a brilliant man. He started something called AHA that you may have heard of, affordable housing.
Okay.
Which morphed into SAHA. So he's very familiar with developing affordable housing.
Wonderful. Oh, 2 comments. First of all, thank you for doing this. Someone who was once homeless, I know the challenges out there and what happens when you come out of homelessness and how you can soar. So thank you for doing this. I just want to ask you, the work that you're going to do with the veterans, the work that you're going to do with the veterans, getting them back on their feet. Veterans.
Sorry, I didn't quite.
The work you're going to do with the veterans. Homeless veterans?
Yes.
Oh, can you hear me better now? Homeless veterans.
Veterans.
Homeless veterans.
Yes.
What are you going to do to help them?
Well, I mean, that population is one of the people, one of the groups that has the least likelihood to get a job.
Yes.
All kinds of mental health issues.
Yes.
All kinds of other issues that go to behavior and post-traumatic stress, as we know.
Right.
A lot of homeless veterans. I came out as a Vietnam veteran, a Vietnam War era, and there's a lot of people my age that are out there homeless.
Yes.
So I have a special affinity with that particular group. We are working with BOSS. We also have a relationship with the West Oakland Health Center, which has a mental health component, and it's only, you know, a minute down the 7th Street, so we can be able to begin to bring those services into the facility, as well as transport people, as I said, through our shuttle service back and forth. So I think that that population of people can begin to heal. I mean, people are still out there at this age who have been in Vietnam. That's pretty terrible. War is pretty terrible, and people who are homeless and veterans, they're pretty much at the bottom of the barrel. And so we want to be able to provide housing and services as we can. Our primary thing is to build these businesses, and I think that also will be available to everybody who wants to participate and work harder and come together and build businesses. And we have a lot of businesses that we're developing.
All right, thank you, Ms.
Yes.
Ali, would you like to add to that?
Yeah, you want to say something?
I want to thank you for considering this amazing project, and I've had the honor of coming back to the affordable housing industry To work with electrifying Elaine Brown.
Yes.
And I am energized by her every time we get together. I came on board as a consultant, and we're talking about a couple of other projects to do as a joint venture with Elaine, and you might be hearing about them.
Wonderful. Great. Thank you.
That's very cool.
I'm done. Yes, thank you. I'm done.
Yeah, no, I think we're set here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded. So now, are we ready? Okay. Vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We're doing vouchers. All right.
Thank you so
Get
much.
Get yourselves into construction really quick. All right. Moving on to D.
Consent agenda.
The consent agenda.
Yes.
There are three items on the consent. The first item is A1. I just want to recognize that we have Mr. Norris here from A1 Securities, the Quality Assurance Director. If you want to raise your hand, Mr. Daniels, the Field Operations Manager, and Captain Hands as well, all here for that item. And you can discuss any individual, poll them if you want, whatever you would like.
Questions, motions?
I move approval of the consent calendar.
All right, we've been moved.
I'll second it.
Second it. We're ready to vote? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Carries unanimously. All right.
Congratulations. Have a good evening, and thank you for coming.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for coming, and have a great evening. Thank you. Okay, so now we have completed item E. We have no new speaker cards, I don't believe. So we're now moving to written communications.
Written communications is our usual monthly report, which we're happy to talk about, and always very proud of the good work we're doing. And also just the board meeting dates and travel. Very light written communications this month. Could have been because I was out of town last week. And then, but I appreciate it. And then, so we're happy to take any questions on that. Moving on to the other one is director's comments. Julia's number, the next one. And I just have a couple things. One is OHA sent 37 OHAUs to a 10-day camp, Mendocino, on July 11th. I'm always thrilled we get to do that. So we had 37 of our kids going camping, and we do it every summer, and it never gets mentioned, and I just wanted to make sure you knew it happened. we have upcoming, the Peralta Back to School Block Party is Friday the 27th, and Lockwood Block Party is Friday, August 10th. So if you're in the neighborhood, please stop by. They usually start around 1 o'clock and go to about 3-ish, 4. That's about, yeah. NARO is in San Francisco. It starts this coming Friday through Sunday, so hopefully some of you can get over there. We have some great presentations by the staff. I think Michelle Hassan's doing a couple. I know Dave's doing one on San Francisco RAD on Friday morning, which I think is going to be really interesting because it's a very innovative deal. We have a Jobs Plus job fair at Peralta Village on August 7th, so if you run into anyone who needs to meet an employer, that's where you go on August 7th. It's in the street in front of the West District office. I also just want to mention two things that are coming up. One is we have been approved for a disposition application and a little revision we got today. So Oak Grove's North and South will move forward, and they'll move forward as a 4% bond deal, so we won't need the money that we've set aside. They'll be turned over ultimately to OPI, who's the general contractor. The new OPI board, at least one member, met a couple weeks ago on some items, and we're going to have to meet a couple more times. But we will have another item back to this board, probably in August, which will approve the whole development and remodel of the Oak Groves. So I'm very excited and grateful that we've got that approval. Harrison Tower above us will be next. That will be next year once we get underway with the two Oak Groves. And this, again, will be done by OPI because that's who control's going to. These office buildings, as you know, are being done. We're currently finalizing the architectural engineering drawings. They're doing a couple of structural tests because we want to change out the HVAC. So if it was a little warm tonight, you have my apologies. All that's being fixed with a greener system. We'll continue to have meetings here as long as we have electricity, AC, and plumbing working, and that should be most of the time. We expect, though, to come to you probably, I don't think it'll be it'll be in the September meeting is what we're shooting for, to award the general contractor to do the work, and then it'll be somewhere between 6 or 8 months till they finish it all and we're reoccupied. And we would, I would just say, like to have a re-grand opening of this building and out in front once we do that.
Yeah.
Because we don't really ever do that, and I want to put a plaque along with the other one. The first one was in 1961 or so, and this one will be on the other side of the entryway, and it'll be in 2019 when the whole building got redone. So,
yeah.
And we'll list everybody. And that's all my comments. We're here for any questions.
Wow. Excellent.
I have a question that's actually in the written comments, I guess, and mm-hmm. that was on the memo regarding the intersection of housing authority assistance and voter turnout.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Yes, I forgot about the memo. And that's my shortness. Come on. I would like to invite our director of planning, implementation, and compliance to come up, who I think did a pretty outstanding job, her and her staff, at pulling this together over the past month at your request.
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having us. I just want to actually introduce Dr. Stephanie Hawk. She's the new research associate that did the lion's share of the analysis in preparing this memo. And so I want to invite her up, because if you have any questions about the analysis, she'd be the better person to answer those.
Okay.
But basically, just to give you a brief overview, the commission asked a couple of questions about voter turnout and OHA properties, and so
yeah.
We turned your general questions into 6 research questions. And you know, I think we may have had a hunch that OHA or authority properties and their turnout may have been lower than the general population in Oakland or the county or even in the state. And so Dr. Hawk went ahead and performed some analysis to help us understand what the results were in terms of the data, and what did the data show, and was there any truth to what we might expect, and we were also able to come up with a few recommendations that we can offer you as well. So I would like to, I'm sure you have questions. I'd also just like to turn it over to Dr. Hawk, because she can better help us see some of the visuals and understand the maps that may have been attached to your memo.
Great. Hi, nice to meet you all. So this first map here is, what I did is I looked at census tract data using the American Community Survey and overlaying that with state-wide voter turnout rolls.
Closer.
Turn it on.
Closer. Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry. Okay, this is great. Okay, census tract data mapped with voter turnout data, essentially. And so here, the green tracks here are are a map of what we determined to be housing authority census tracts, either indicated by 100 HCVs being used, or the blue dots are the mixed finance units, and the black dots are public housing units. And then if we move on, now we look at voter turnout, and these tracks here in the red, our voter turnout is less than 60% of the registered voting population. And if we kind of map those on top of each other, we can see quite an overlap, right? So all but 3 of the lowest turnout tracks are OHA tracks. So that was our general analysis. Do you have specific questions? Sorry.
I think I've asked this question before, but I don't remember, so my apologies if I'm repeating myself. But do any of our properties serve as polling locations?
We do, yes.
Okay.
We do on different, I think Peralta does, I think Lockwood does. I'm not sure about Campbell. I think it has in the past. It's different every election. We
mm-hmm.
get requests, and we will be there.
And I'm curious, is there any difference in how and the percentage of folks who are voting at the sites where there are polling locations?
That's a really good question. We looked at a heat map of where the polling locations are
mm-hmm.
as compared to where OHA tracks are, and we saw a distinct lack of heat. That is a lack of polling places in Deep East.
Of polling places mm-hmm. themselves?
Yeah.
So basically there is a, in Deep East Oakland, there's probably a lot, there is, are, there are or excuse me, there are a lot fewer polling places in our Deep East Oakland concentrated area, so down here. In West Oakland, where we did have a polling place at Peralta, there was a little bit more, there were fewer, a few more polling places, and we did have one on site at Peralta. So okay. one of the yeah. questions that we asked is, and one of the recommendations that we make is, you know, where are there areas that we might want to recommend to the registrar voters to increase the number of polling places? And it definitely is in Deep East Oakland. There's a concentration in West Oakland and then also in, towards the hills of polling places or in precincts, but not necessarily, that's not the case in Deep East Oakland.
Yeah, I guess I'm wondering if it's possible to make a strategic push at our properties that are, you know, affiliate properties or otherwise to try and increase that number of polling places in Deep East and in particular to have greater influence.
I know. I wish all of our providers that were here just 20 minutes ago could have heard that comment. But because what you said is I think, really, because we always just think of us.
Right.
But if you think of the projects we're involved in throughout the city, you know, now 94th and International desperately needing a polling place.
Right.
Yes.
You know, that we could actually reach out to all of our awardees and partners and also the county register recorder who is always contacting us to see, you know, where we can have them. In Lockwood, I know we've had it in Lockwood, but Rainbow Rec is very close, so it usually then, but it's under construction now, so maybe we'll be back at Lockwood, I don't know. And I'm not certain how it, in terms of being on site and having the polling there, you know, I don't know that it has a huge impact to the people who get up and actually decide, oh, if I'm going to go vote this morning or not. But I do think the lack of polling places in the area that's near the airport over there, and also if you look at the lower bottoms, I think is one of the driving forces.
It just seems like it can't hurt to have
them
close by.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. I think we can maybe put them, put those two folks together in some method, and I'll think about how, but that's a great, great idea.
Yeah, and the county registrar's office is definitely open to increasing its, you know, presence in terms of polling places in areas that need it, and they rely on community input in order to make those decisions. So,
do you know if they have trouble staffing them? Did we have,
I know that it's an opportunity for community involvement, particularly amongst high school students, to have them staff it. They get paid a little bit of money, learn about civic engagement. So that's a real push on their behalf,
I just always heard that was one of the challenges at having when you increase polling locations is to try and get people to staff them.
The registrar of voters, I work in Deep East Oakland, and they've come out to us, and they really push residents to do vote by mail because our walking distance to local polling places are too hard for most of our residents who are seniors. And we do work with a neighborhood church, though. Alan Temple comes by and picks up folks and takes them to local polling places. But they're so scattered. And for residents who have mobility issues, it's very difficult.
So, Lynette, you had a question.
I think those are really good questions and comments. I also wonder if this is really helpful to get this information. Thank you both for doing this. Do we offer any voter education workshops? Because I think, especially when you get a thick ballot and a lot of information, it's pretty overwhelming.
We have very restrictive things we can do being federally funded.
But especially on the propositions and initiatives?
No, we would never do that.
Oh, because
we would get sued.
I see.
We can't advocate on behalf of any given
ballot.
Not
necessarily to advocate, but I do know
it's
that
a fine
League
line.
Of
so
Women
what
Voters.
What we can do is bring the League in or bring in other people.
But yes.
And they do often attend our resident management meetings, by the way, when it gets close to the election and go over the different items that are of interest, and we always welcome that. We can only facilitate really voter turnout. That's, you know, it's fine for us to try and get out the vote, but we never want to be accused of steering people.
No, I certainly understand that.
It's as we talked about recently with this, even this item, we would have put more in here, but we realized it wasn't necessarily something that the Housing Authority should be engaged in. Looking at this differently was the first approach. But the goal with this is how can we make sure that our residents' voice get heard at the polls?
Yes, that's, precisely.
That's the agenda. It's right. How they get heard or what they're going to say is up to our residents.
Right, precisely.
Yeah. And just so you know, there's some consistency across different agencies. I got an invitation today to a workshop that's being hosted by the Alameda County Food Bank that basically is answering these same questions that you posed. So I would say that there's some synergies in terms of different agencies asking that question of how do we increase voter turnout, especially among low-income populations. And so we're not the only ones that are thinking of it. We are trying to be creative in the way that we can, you know, make recommendations to impact that without, of course, advocating, you know, on different partisan issues and things like that. But
and one of the other things we do with the league actually is, you know, we send at least one table, sometimes a table and a half or two table of residents there every single year, just to meet people and mingle and get to understand what the league does and how they can engage them.
That's great.
Yeah.
Just one more thought. Raising that point, Dominica, about other agencies that are grappling with the same question, I'm wondering if there's a way in which we can partner with other organizations that aren't federally funded mm-hmm. in places where we may feel some nervousness or discomfort. In particular, I think the thing that has been of interest to me is a way in which we can bring to our residents in a variety of different ways an opportunity to participate in forums, so nonpartisan, but to bring, ensure that candidates in particular are speaking to and making themselves available for questions from our residents. And if that can't happen on our site, if that can at least be done in planning partnership with other organizations that are proximate to mm-hmm. our locations and use some of our mechanisms for getting the word out about those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes that can work. It's all geared toward turnout. A candidate could attend any of the mm-hmm. resident meetings that go on in the developments and ask for time. But as can almost any nonprofit.
Yeah, but I guess I'm thinking specifically of hosted candidate forums where there is and ask of all candidates for a particular mm-hmm. position to come out and address a particular community. Mm-hmm. Those things happen all the time throughout the city, but they don't happen necessarily in our mm-hmm. communities. And so if there is a way in which we can bring that kind of conversation, if we can't do it at our own locations, but in partnership with others, but mm-hmm. really through our networks support that, I think that would be huge.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would just suggest that maybe that could be on the RAB's agenda, mm-hmm. and we could work on the voter registration, especially during the times when there are the president's election or mm-hmm. the mayor's election. Mm-hmm. I think that would be very good, and I think the RAB members would be very interested in doing that.
Yes.
And hosting a candidate forum, that they would be a mm-hmm. good entity to do that.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Be up to them, but I think we can throw it out. I think you will.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking, Eric, you actually sparked something in my mind when you said that, you know, hey, if we add more polling places, is that really going to help the turnout? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm wondering if we have any idea what is needed to increase the turnout. I mean, are there obstacles that need to be overcome to increase the turnout? Is there education, inspiration, or what exactly is it? And if we don't know what it is it possible?
I think a lot of people just have opinions, and it's not necessarily, you know, what we can do is increase awareness.
Yes.
And that's what we focus on. What Commissioner Grace Murphy said, I think, is right on the money, which is to encourage people to vote by mail. There's a bill pending that they will have to put it in a postage page envelope so you don't have to go find two or three stamps to mail something so thick, which is what you have to do now. And I do think then the push becomes getting people to register and then register to vote by mail so they get something in the mail. They can do it when they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. The other thing I was going to mention that we do is we have Our Voice, which is the resident-driven mm-hmm. publication, mm-hmm. and they will very often talk about what's on the ballot, and they try and give you links to the county site for the bond measures, wherever they are, that you can read more and educate. They try and do it from a very neutral reporting kind of position, yes. and where our residents can actually go do the research and make people aware of what's on the ballot. And that goes to 15,000 households in Oakland, yeah. so it's a wide reach. One year we did have it, she wasn't on the ballot, we did have Congresswoman Lee write a letter about the ballot and the importance of voting, and we published that letter. Just anything we can do to kind of put the word out, the election's happening, this is when you have to register, I think really does help. And that's one tool. You know, the board endorsed in concept something that looks like it's going to be in the November ballot, but we haven't done an official OHA endorsement because now it's on the ballot asking for money, so we're kind of being quiet about it because that's not really our role. But I would tell you part of the reason is it will allow the residents in Our Voice to write and report on both sides of that bond in there, you know, and I just thought that's probably a better use of us than having any formal endorsement or anything like that.
Yes. Great. One other recommendation that we saw that might work is OUSD has partnered with some voter registration organizations to make sure that they are encouraging young people to vote and the high school age people to register to vote and to vote. What we find is that the general age of voters, people who actually do turn out to vote, is older. And so to the extent that we can also encourage high school age students to register, they can register apparently before they're 18. And so we can make sure that we also advertise that in some of our resident outreach as well.
Well, you know, I guess what I was really mulling in my mind is that since housing authority areas are under voting relative to the surrounding area, but the surrounding areas are also under voting compared to other surrounding areas, so it's kind of like a double thing. And you know, usually when something like that happens, there's some kind of reason behind it. And if we know what that reason really is, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe we couldn't address it a little bit more effectively. And I guess this study didn't really touch on that. I mean, I wonder if it would be possible to gather data to give us that kind of information, or would that be worthwhile, or...
I don't think it's the role of the housing authority. I'm just going to say that. I think our role is awareness and outreach, and we specifically didn't use data matching in any of this for voter rolls and OHA residents because that becomes targeting.
Yeah.
What we did is use census tract data. So what you're looking at are the general census tracts of our neighborhoods. Yeah. And the other thing to remember is we're majority of our tenants are Section 8. So if you think about Lockwood and Peralta, you've got 700 people living there compared to 15,000 Section 8 people in the city.
Yeah.
That we really need to look at more than just Lockwood. The surrounding neighborhood has more Section 8 in it than Lockwood has units.
Right, so it's really more of a general thing than
yeah.
it is specific to us.
Yeah.
But agree.
That, you know, that's, we just have to be cognizant that there are people who desperately don't want us to use any federal dollars in a way that can be deemed as steering, and we will have the OIG here in a minute if they think that's going on. Mm-hmm. And they have looked at other housing authorities, so I'm very nervous about doing anything outside of really awareness and outreach and then bringing in any organizations that want to do the work with our residents is great.
Good.
Thank you. Did you have another one?
No, we're done.
Well, at one of our deep East Oakland communities, we had East Oakland Building Healthy Communities that encouraged residents to, they had a candidate forum, they had a mayoral forum for the last mayor's race, and they allowed the residents to actually draw the questions, make it a community driven. And I think it really increased our voter turnout for our building. And we worked with a lot of other nonprofit developers that were close in proximity to Depot, the East Oakland. But it's still very, it's still one of the areas of Oakland that's the lowest voter turnout, so it's still more work to be done.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Commissioner, thank you. You asked some of my questions. Thank you very much. So this is my question. I just came back from Los Angeles as a chaperone. We took 31 high school students to tour UC. Yes. And in one of the workshops they got was voter registration. So I'm sitting there going, wow, we got all these high school students who don't want to vote. As I read this, page 2, question 4, what percentage of the voting age population voted? And it was a low percentage. So my question to you, how many high school students do we house? Do we have that number? Or how do we?
School age youth is different. I would have to look at the breakdown. I don't know it off the top of my head. How many high school kids are there? We can get it. I just don't know.
I'm sorry. Yeah, so I was just kind of interested. How do we get the high school students more engaged and wanting to know more about the reason why to vote?
Well, I think it, I mean, we can definitely get back to you in terms of the number of high school students. I think it's difficult for us to assert why, you know, and the reasons why the voter turnout might be low. But what we can do is definitely, you know, map the data to demonstrate. And in addition to mapping the data, also provide some visual aids to help understand what the turnout is. I think any more, you know, any more than that in terms of the depth of the reason, it's a little bit difficult for us to tease out.
And Director, is there anything we can do to like do a workshop for high school students here?
I'll defer to Executive Director Johnson, but I think that we do see some partnerships that the Oakland Unified School District has with, for example, the League of Women Voters and different voter education groups. And so, you know, that may be something that FCP might want to be able to encourage, but we do see it citywide in terms of the presence in high schools. And so I think that the school district is probably the group that has the largest reach and bandwidth in terms of voter education of high school students, but maybe we can add some component of that to some of our education initiative as well.
So I really appreciate this. Thank you very much.
Okay, any further questions, comments, or whatever? Okay, well, thank you.
Thank
you very much. That was very interesting.
Good study.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
Chair Hartwick?
Yes.
Could I just ask a question about the written reports?
You certainly may.
So I do want to compliment staff on continuing to increase the occupancy rates in the OHA units and other units. And so it's been really good to see over time that they're reaching into the 90s and mid-90s, and that's really great. I wonder about what's happening with Fruitvale. This is on page 26 in the written report. Are there particular challenges? Oh, not 26.
Yeah, 25.
25.
Yeah.
That that make it less successful in terms of occupancy?
That really is a wait list issue, if I understand it. But I'm going to, do you want to come up and Mark Schifferl, our Director of Property Operations, will come talk a little bit about that. But it has moved up in OPI, and I'm grateful for that. And the other thing that I'm truly grateful for, if you look at the overall public housing, we're doing extremely well, which is, it's important to stay above 97, and we're above 98.
Yeah,
Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about that? I can't hear you. There.
The green light does help. Good evening, Commissioners. Mark Schifferl, Director of Property Management. The 27 units that we have vacant in Fruitvale right now, we have applicants that are in process through the Leased Housing Department that will be coming over. So you should see movement with those units getting rent soon.
Great. Always such a great need.
Always in process. It's an effort between Leased Housing and us to process applicants so they do mm-hmm. come through.
All right. Thank you.
Michelle's here.
Cool. Okay. We now move to reports of commission committees.
Sir, I was just wondering, since the school year has ended, whether the educational committee will be scheduled to just give us a year-end wrap up.
I don't know if we've gotten the data, but we certainly can schedule something.
If it's check the roll up.
Good evening, Commissioners. Lenita Wheeler, your Director of Family and Community Partnerships. We will receive year-end data in actually early fall. So the school district takes the entire summer in which to put the data together, and we typically receive that in October.
Okay, thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a meeting in November.
Thank you.
Be okay?
Yeah, as soon as we can get that's a great idea. And I don't know that we have anything in the summer necessarily to talk to, but we're happy to meet and just
a discussion. If you feel like there's enough information for us to get an update, it would be great.
We certainly can provide a dashboard, okay. Just letting you know where we currently are, where we've come the yeah. last couple of years. We can certainly update you on any specific activities you're interested in. Earlier, Director Johnson mentioned the number of kids going to camp. We have that type of information available, but the information from the school district we receive at a calendar. We're on a regular schedule in which we receive that
data.
So
maybe in August, or we could be, and just go over the previous year activities okay. that our OHA's kids, the Promise Plus, the Ambassador Program, yeah. schools they're in, some of the things that we filled and done. Yeah, and then we can do the data roll up later in the fall. Okay.
Thank you.
Cool. Okay, there were no other committees, I don't believe. Any announcements by commissioners? If we have no announcement by commissioners, then we are going to head to closed session.
We are. I'd just like to make one announcement first, and this is for staff as well as here. There is a demonstration at 18th and Telegraph related
oh, yeah.
to the murder of Nia Wilson and the assault of Latifah Wilson, and our hearts go out to that family and Ansar Mohammed, who is the head of household, and I just want to send our love to them all and let staff know not to go by that area on the way home, as well as commissioners.
18th and Telegraph.
Yeah, 18th and Telegraph is where I hear they are. That's right, Chief, 18th? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That's the helicopters you probably hear.
I see.
And that's it.
All right. So.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Okay. We are adjourned.
First, and I need a second.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Somebody want a second?
Oh, I second.
Okay.
See, I just assumed.
I consent. We are adjourned. It is.
I thought someone had second.
8:15.
Yeah.
All right. Closed session. No.
John Stewart stayed there. No, we have no plans to do that. I mean, we still own it, and there are contracts here. But no.
Yes, yes, I read that. No, I read that. Yes,
you know, Erica,
read the whole thing. No, I read the whole thing. I thought that was actually. Yes, I thought that was. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering where that came from, because I said, "Wow, that's pretty cool." Oh yes.
Yeah, I give you guys this. I don't feel I.
Oh, yeah. No, I know she was with the Black Panthers, but when she...
When?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe. Well, I'm sorry, because I thought that I announced very clearly that it was announced before anybody had them, and I asked if anybody had any more, and I didn't hear anything, so then we went forward.
It was a while ago.
Oh.
He was before Susan Friedman.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, you could just make that. No one cuts you off. Nobody stops you.
That's what I felt.
Yeah, I know where.
Well, that wasn't happening. I was actually paying careful attention to that, and I was waiting for you to say something. But then, when you didn't, I assumed maybe you did not have any announcements to make. So, well, what we can do is, you could distribute them to everybody. You could just send.